Craig became CEO of AMP in early 2008, and prior to that has held a number of senior roles, both within AMP's banking and financial services operations. Prior to that, he was CEO of a Malaysian-based subsidiary of Colonial. He holds a number of directorships and is very active with the government in areas such as financial literacy and the ageing population. He's also a former chair of IFSA, so certainly very well qualified in the industry and in Australia. And being at the head of a significant financial services company, Craig is very well placed to give us his perspective on the importance of ERM to him and his board. Please join me in welcoming Craig to the stage.
Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thanks, Mike, for that warm introduction. It's a great pleasure to be here with you this morning. I've been asked to talk on the topic of why enterprise risk management is good for business. And in many ways, I think that's a massive understatement, and I'd argue that most good businesses are going to find it increasingly difficult to survive and prosper given the increasingly volatile environment we face in the globe today, without an effective risk management system that operates across the enterprise. Obviously, this is a subject that's much more typical following the advent of the GFC, particularly in financial services, but it's an area that AMP's been working on for many years. And really, what I wanted to do with you today is, I suppose, share the journey that AMP's been on in continuing to seek to improve its risk management systems and its approach to enterprise risk management, and hopefully through that share some of the learnings and some of the challenges that we've found along the way. And as Mike said, I will try and give it a bit of a focus more from a CEO or board level. There are much more qualified people than me in the audience today to take you through technical concepts, and that's not my area of expertise. So it's going to be very much from a business perspective, if you like. And just on that point, one of the challenges I think from a business is that risk management is in many ways a conceptual topic, and in a financial services organisation can be a topic that's pretty complex and frankly sometimes difficult for people to grasp and understand across the business. And that's challenging because in the end a risk management system is only going to be effective if the business leaders or the people across the business or organisation that are making decisions understand it and grasp what you're seeking to do. There's no point having a very complicated risk management system that business leaders don't understand and can't act on. And in one way, I suppose a question that we've asked ourselves is, if people or business leaders aren't changing the decisions they make because of the risk management system, then effectively your risk management system isn't as good as it should be. Now, as you'd expect, for many years in AMP, and I'm sure it's the case in all large financial institutions, we've had quite a methodical and disciplined approach and a fairly technical approach to risk management. But as I said before, I don't think it was driving all business decisions or all important business decisions. And that's, as I said before, something that's obviously very important. And that also goes to the measurement of risk. I think a trap in this area is to focus solely or almost fundamentally on the risk measurement system that you have. Now, clearly, if risk management is going to be effective, you have to have a way of measuring it. You can't have an approach to risk management if you can't measure it. But measurement is not an end in itself. Measures don't count if people in the business don't understand them or can't use them to make better business decisions. So again, much of the focus we've tried to take in the last few years is in adopting an enterprise risk management system. How do we do that in a way that the business leaders and people across the business who are empowered to make decisions can make decisions in a more informed way, in a way that explicitly takes risk into account? And that, I suppose, is really being the focus of our journey over the last couple of years. And I will come back to later about talking at a very high level about the approach we've taken to measuring risk and the key choices that we've made in that area. But again, Probably the most fundamental thing we had to address was getting the organisation and its people to really understand what we meant by risk. Now, that sounds like a pretty silly thing to say, but I think in the current environment, particularly post the GFC, for many people in the business, it's quite easy for risk to be seen as a negative word and something that you should avoid because of the consequences that risk-taking can bring to an organisation. And again, we're all working in an environment where we've seen the dramatic impacts on many organisations of a very volatile and difficult economic environment, which has translated into significant losses from an organisation's perspective. But of course, if you don't take risk, you can't make returns. You know, no risk, no business return. So we've sought to adopt, I suppose, a more expansive definition to risk and get people to understand that we want people in the organisation to take risks. That's how we make money. But we want them to make informed decisions that explicitly recognise risk, and we want them to make choices about the risks that they take. And ideally, invest their resources or priorities in those options that will provide the greatest returns for all our stakeholders, given a constant level of risk. Now, one of the challenges in this environment is people only make choices if the resource that they're considering is scarce or limited. It's quite easy in a capital sense because most people understand that there's a finite level of capital in an organisation, certainly in the short term, and therefore that has to be employed or invested wisely. What we've sought to do in AMP is create the same sense about risk. It's a limited or scarce resource that, when invested wisely, can substantially improve returns for all stakeholders, but it does have a finite way of applying itself in the organisation. And the only way you can do that, of course, is to set an overall risk appetite or risk budget that says we're not going to take any more risk than this, and therefore within the business the challenge is to use that limited risk budget as most effective as possible. And that, of course, leads you to the challenge or the next step of defining your appetite for risk. And that's much easier to say than to do, is our experience. Where do you start? Do you think about, you know, in a publicly listed company, your investors and your investors' appetite for risk? You would take the approach that that's fundamentally the board's responsibility and it should be about the level of risk that you should take to appropriately deliver on your business strategy. Do you consider it solely from a shareholder's perspective? Or in a company like AMP, do you also consider policyholders or customers' attitude to risk? Do you think about the impacts of risk and risk appetite solely in terms of risk-based capital or in terms of profit? And what about non-financial objectives like your reputation and brand? So it's quite a challenging position or objective to define your risk appetite in an organisation. As I said, it's much easier to say than to do. But you have to start somewhere. And fundamentally, the responsibility for setting the risk appetite in any organisation obviously rests and must be owned by the board. And so the approach we took initially, and I would say that our approach, just as a tangent to that comment, on risk appetite is an iterative and dynamic one. We're constantly reviewing, in fact we do it on a 6-monthly basis with the board, the overall level of risk appetite we take as an organisation. And the way we started this journey was to set our appetite for risk in terms of the profit at risk. So what sort of variation in profit were we prepared to take as an organisation given a prescribed set of circumstances? Now, many organisations, and this is just the journey we've taken, other organisations may have taken a different approach, start with a more complex approach with risk-based capital. Now, clearly, in an enterprise-wide approach to risk management in a financial institution, risk-based capital is fundamental to anything you do. But profit is much easier for people to understand. Most people in an organisation understand what profit is and why it goes up and down. Trying to explain risk-based capital to a broad set of stakeholders in a business that you want to be empowered to make decisions is much more challenging. So the approach we started with at board level was to say, well, what level of profit do we think we're prepared to accept in variation in a given year assuming a set of circumstances. That gives you, if you like, your overall tolerance for risk at a board level. If you like, it gives you your risk budget. And then the challenge for senior management is then to allocate that risk budget across the different types of risks and the different types of businesses that we have in an organisation like AMP. And I say it was iterative because having done that, it then allows you to work through the consequences of the risk appetite the board set and then go back to the board and say, well, given you've set this risk budget or this risk appetite as an organisation, to comply with that set of objectives or that level of risk appetite, we need to make these different decisions in the business. So you make it real for the board, and it then becomes an iterative process, as I said. Well, is that the right level of risk that we want to take as an organisation, given what we want to achieve in terms of our business strategy? And as I said, that's an iterative and very dynamic approach, and it's something that we continue to recalibrate over time. I think the great advantage of taking that approach with the board is you fundamentally shift the discussion of risk to a different plane. So given the corporate governance climate in Australia and most parts of the world today following the GFC, it's very natural to focus, or the focus of a board to be on, the consequences of taking risks in terms of an adverse climate and the losses that you might incur as an organisation. A better and more balanced discussion at a board level and amongst your senior management team is to be conscious of the losses that you can incur in resulting or as a result of taking certain risks, but just as importantly, be aware of the adverse consequences of not taking certain risks. What are the consequences on your growth strategy or your business strategy if you agree not to take a given risk? So I don't know whether that makes sense, but we've found in doing that that the discussion at the board became a more balanced one, and again recognised that risk is a good thing if used wisely and if well understood. So that, I suppose, is where we started, and I think that helped with the understanding at the board and senior management. The other thing we learned in this process is not all risk-taking is discretionary in the short term. There are certain promises or past promises that you will have made to customers that means you have risk on your balance sheet or within your business that you can't remove in the short term. So when you're looking at your risk budget, one of our key learnings was there's a certain element of that risk budget that's assumed simply because of your legacy of history. And I'll come to this a bit later on, but a perfect example is the annuity portfolio in AMP. They are promises, very important promises, that we've made to retirees in the past. Implicit in that promise is a certain level of risk that you take with the product, that unless you get rid of that portfolio, it's hard to modify. I mean, you can make some slightly different decisions in your asset allocation, which you'd all be aware of, but fundamentally you've got that risk, and you've got that risk taking away from your risk budget. One of the challenges we also had in the organisation, well, that's a great discussion to have at a board and senior management level, and it was a very useful discussion to have and one we continue to have. But how do you make that real in a business setting? Because as you'd know in your own roles, whilst there's a very significant technical role to what you do, a key part of your role or any risk manager's role is to make that real for the business. And our own experience was trying to explain complex financial models to people in the business was not a great way to get them engaged and involved in understanding what we were seeking to do. And in fact, James Myerscough, who's our program director for enterprise risk management, has what I thought was a very good visual metaphor or analogy in terms of how we should be thinking about risk. And he actually brought this to the board, where he brought a balloon full of water to the board, and he explained to the board, and then we use this across the business, that this was our universe of risk. This was our risk budget, if you like, that the board had decided to apply at AMP. And then he pinched it in the middle and said, this water that's taken up by this part of the balloon is absorbed by operational risk, as an example. Now, the challenge with operational risk, and obviously it's a key focus in any business, is that whilst it's implicit in other business decisions that you've taken to generate revenues and profits, it in itself doesn't generate returns for the business. So the point he was making in that balloon is if you squeeze the balloon and reduce the size or mass of water that's absorbed by operational risk, you have a greater capacity for risk or a greater capacity to take more risk elsewhere in the organisation. Now, I can see by your faces, some of you think that's a very similar, silly thing to do. But the point is, it had an impact. And it basically had a real impact in explaining that risk is a scarce resource. And if you use too much of it over here, in a part of the organisation that's not really adding value, you've got less risk budget to use elsewhere where you can generate much better returns. Anyway, it's just an interesting aside, and I think it was a smart way of engaging people in trying to understand what we were seeking to do. And this goes back to the fundamental premise that if you want people to make choices on risk, you have to set a finite level of risk in the organisation, and you want them then to make those choices. And you want them to focus on allocating that risk, obviously, in the areas that produce the greatest returns for our stakeholders. And that led, I suppose, to us looking at a number of areas of our business and realising that, surprise, surprise, in a financial institution, the biggest risk you take is financial market risk. And what we found when we worked through the measure of risk using a simple profit at risk measure is that a large part of that balloon, if you like, or that appetite for risk or that risk budget was being absorbed by our shareholders' fund and being absorbed by our annuities book. So it meant risk-based capital, if you like, or our appetite for risk was going into a shareholders' fund that, if you think about, isn't really going to get a high PE multiple on it in terms of business growth. I mean, people, our shareholders, want us to manage off our shareholders' fund responsibly, and they want us to get reasonable returns on that fund. But if you've got too much risk in that fund, it's absorbing risk you could take elsewhere. So what we decided to do, and we actually made this decision before the GFC, I wish we'd implemented it a bit more quickly than we did, because we implemented it through the course of the GFC, but we made a decision, which is a long-term decision, to reduce our weighting to equities and to highly weighted credit risk bonds, which is simply about reducing the amount of risk that our shareholders' fund was absorbing, because the returns it would generate, according to the growth profile and other parts of our business, was a lot less attractive. And we also did the same thing with our annuity book, as I touched on before. And that's the reason we closed our annuity book. The risk that we're taking in our annuity book and the return that we get for that risk relative to the investment of that risk budget that we can take elsewhere in the business is not as great. And so the two fundamental decisions we took as we introduced this new approach to risk management was dramatically alter the risk allocation or asset allocation, the shareholders' fund, and close our annuities portfolio. And I suppose the point of those examples is that was of comfort to me as CEO, because I felt like the risk management system that we were starting to roll out or improve was actually impacting real business decisions. And that goes back to, you know, the first question I posed to you at the beginning of my talk, is if your risk management system is not causing business leaders and senior decision makers in your organisation to think about risk differently and to impact their day-to-day business decisions, then your risk management system isn't as effective as it should be. Now, the examples I used have, of course, allowed us to free up a risk budget to use elsewhere in the organisation. And it's something that we also apply to the consideration of M&A. So when we look at an M&A opportunity now, we will look at the risk profile and the risk budget that that acquisition opportunity might consume and think about how that compares to our overall level of risk and our appetite for risk. And that's meant we've, in certain instances, actually put certain opportunities in M&A to one side because we haven't been comfortable with the level of risk that they would absorb. So again, it's another example of turning an enterprise approach to risk management into real life and causing it to impact your business decisions. In other areas, an interesting thing to observe is that you can allocate, or we are allocating, more risk to certain parts of the business than you might argue their current earnings justify. And again, I mean, the concept of risk-based capital is very similar, but for example, in Asia, where we've got a long-term growth strategy in our investment management business, the level of risk capital or the level of the risk budget that absorbs today is much greater than the earnings that part of the business is making. And again, that's a conscious decision to allocate more risk to that area because we think it's a greater opportunity for growth into the future. So I think the approach that we've taken, and none of this is rocket science, and it may be that many of you are doing the same thing in your own organisation, the key thing it's done is to ration risk, to see risk in a positive light, but to get people to understand that they've got to make choices. And if you think about any business and any business strategy, a strategy in business is all about making choices. It's about making choices about how and where you want to compete as a business. And the more those choices, which all have implicit risk decisions or choices within them, the more those choices are understood from a risk perspective that's explicit and clear, in my view, the better decisions the business will make. And that's fundamentally what we're trying to do with our approach to enterprise risk management. Now, I know you've got a topic later in the day about culture and risk management, and there are much better people and better experts to speak about this than to me. But the point I made earlier in the session is that you're trying to almost infect the business with a new approach to decision making. You're trying to change the culture of the business so that people understand the importance of risk. You're trying to get people, executives, people managing functions, whatever, through the organisation, that risk management is not something that you, another thing that they add to the list. That's already a very long list for most people today, and something they have to do. It's something that goes to the fabric of every decision they make in business. So it's trying to fundamentally get people to think differently about risk. Now, that's also caused us to review the delegations of authority and to look at those delegations of authority from more of a risk-based perspective. And again, none of this is rocket science, but it's being clear in the organisation about where the responsibilities and accountabilities for risk sit. So, for example, clearly it's the board's responsibility to set the organisation's appetite for risk. That's clearly understood. It's clearly measured, and as I said before, it's something that we discuss with our board every 6 months, because obviously the world's continuing to change, as are the consequences of the business decisions we've made in the past. We then regard it as senior management's responsibility to allocate that tolerance for risk or that risk budget across our various businesses with the view to driving the best returns. So we have quite an active debate in my management team, given that budget for risk, where that budget should go. And then that has obviously implications for various businesses in our organisation. Some of them may be operating at levels of risk that we think are too high, and therefore they have to work to get that risk budget down. Some of them may be granted more risk because we think that's a sensible portfolio decision to make. But again, you get a portfolio debate discussion going in your business team or senior management team that's centred around risk management. Importantly then, you're trying to get other levels in the organisation, other business leaders then, to pick up on that and ideally make decisions that support that. And they, of course, will have clear delegations of the levels of risk that they can take in their roles and a clear understanding of what they need to do if for whatever reason they exceed that limit and how that reports back to the centre. So again, nothing very new in that, but just I think better clarity about who's responsible for risk in the organisation. One of the biggest challenges we've then faced is working with people through the organisation to make those choices. And again, you know that you've got the right tension in a business when you're asking your leaders to make choices and make choices fully informed or with an explicit understanding of the risk they're taking. And that's something that we've worked very hard to do. We're not quite there, but we'll be moving to the point where a line manager, in addition to having a budget for profit and maybe a budget for capital, and then within that at a more detailed level, budgets for revenue and costs, to also have a risk budget. So they will be, when they submit their business plans, they will be setting out what their tolerance for risk is in their part of the organisation and what risk budget they're working to. So then you're getting, again, an iterative process of top-down, bottom-up, where the business line heads are telling you what sort of risk budget they want to drive the returns in their business. Now, we're not there yet, but that's what we're seeking to move to. And again, I think when we get to that stage, it will be a powerful demonstration that risk management is being embodied in the organisation. Because if you're getting line managers to budget for risk, you know that it's having an impact. Now, again, they're budgeting for risk on a profit-at-risk concept, which I know is simpler and not as complex and maybe not as technically correct as risk-based capital, but it's an easier one for them to understand. As I said earlier, people understand profit. People understand mostly what causes it to go up and down. So, again, it's an easier concept for business leaders to pick up and work with. Around that, just to finish on the approach to governance, those clear delegations of authority, we've obviously got coordinated risk reporting. Obviously, if you're going to take a holistic approach to risk, you need the full organisation to report on its risk. There's explicit policies and terms of reference for the management of risk, an assurance process that goes to the auditing and checking of the models that are reporting risk through, and of course we've now got that clearly articulated risk appetite coming down from the board. Now again, we've done many of these things to try and take what is potentially a quite complex and conceptual topic and to make it real, and I know I'm stressing that and repeating myself, but I just think that's so important to get it to work. And again, that's why we chose to adopt a more simple profit at risk measure than go for a more complex risk-based capital measure. Now, that doesn't mean that, for example, in our statutory number one fund, that we don't have a very complex risk-based capital model that measures our capital at risk and that we don't actively manage that. Of course we do. And there'll be other parts of our business where we have similarly complex models. But if you're running a business line out in the regions, that has no impact or meaning for you. And that's why we've adopted a myriad of models. And as I said, measuring risk is really important, but it's not an end in itself. The other thing we found is that you need a common language around risk. Now, again, it sort of sounds like a common sense thing to do, but if you're going to have an enterprise-wide management approach to risk, you have to have a common language. It's like any change program. If you haven't got a common language that people understand and can relate to, you can't be effective in that change program. And what we found is there were variances in a number of different ways that people across the organisation even defined operational risk, for example, versus strategic risk or financial markets risk. And you have to have a common approach to those definitions and a common approach to that management, measurement. And that was a challenge for us initially, that we had to deal with. And we tried to deal with it in a way that we were educating people at the same time as forming these new approaches or common-wide approaches and also getting their alignment or commitment to the system that we're introducing. And just finally, a few comments on risk-based models, which I suppose haven't got the greatest reputation at the moment, perhaps unfairly. But obviously I think one of the things we've all learned through the financial crisis is a model is only good as assumptions. And those assumptions need to continue to be challenged and need a continued reality check. And I know at times at AMP you can sort of just accept the model's always right and sometimes make decisions that frankly just common sense would cause you to think of twice. And so whilst we're working very hard to continue to refine and build our models, and clearly that takes a lot of input from very technical people, including our actuarial team, we are trying to continually challenge and evaluate and try and step back from the models and say, is what that model telling us, does it just make common sense? And does it feel right? Now, that's not a great technical test, but it's probably as good as any. You know, there's nothing better than a common dose of common sense in risk management. And that's what we're trying to apply as well. And again, whilst, you know, a very disciplined an academic approach to the measurement of certain risk is absolutely fundamental. And I take our statutory fund number one. It's critical that we do that in a disciplined and technical and professional manner. But again, not many people in businesses understand black boxes. And if you have a risk management system that is a black box in the corner that only a few people understand and don't get, then nothing changes. So again, we've tried to improve our modelling, challenge it from a common sense perspective, and also recognise that it always has limitations. I think my final point on a risk management culture is it has to, the want to do this, the passion, the energy for introducing this into an organisation starts from the very top. Now, I know you hear that in many different forums and it sounds like a cliche, but if I'm not committed to this and people don't understand that I and the board are fundamentally serious about enterprise risk management and making it real and making it effective, it won't happen. And I think one of the things that our technical people have done very well is help me understand the benefits of effective risk management, help the board understand it at another level of detail so that we can better lead the organisation. So where to from here? As I said, I think we've made some good progress in risk management and enterprise risk management, but like any large organisation, we're far from perfect and we've still got a way to go on this journey. And frankly, like most journeys, there's no end. You just keep trying to improve and get closer to the end of the rainbow, which you never succeed in doing. I think what we've achieved is that more people across the business are talking about risk in a more informed way. I think we're having more sophisticated and a more enlightened and explicit approach to risk management from the board down. We've certainly got improved structures in place to manage the risk, and I think we're building a culture that tries to reinforce the approach that we want to take to the management of risk. So I think we're moving in the right direction, but we still have many challenges ahead of us. I think we can improve in our understanding of our clients' attitude to risk and trying to embody their attitudes to risk more effectively in the product or the service offering we're providing them. We do that with our policyholders in our guaranteed book, but I think we can do that more effectively across the organisation rather than just limiting our approach to risk to shareholders. So that's something that we're also now starting to focus on. So if I just wrap up, it's clearly a very important topic, and I congratulate the Institute for hosting this conference, because I think if Australia gets this right, and I think we do this in some ways better than other parts of the world, but it's something that we can always improve. So I congratulate the Institute on the conference they're holding today, and that's why I was so keen to come and talk about it, because it's really important to the success of Australian business and therefore to the success of our country. This stuff matters. If we get the right approach to risk management in businesses across Australia, then we're going to promote a greater and better understanding of risk. We're going to force business executives or challenge business executives to make more explicit choices and to make choices that understand the risks implicit in the decisions they may or may not make and convert that into an explicit understanding of better decision making. It's going to and clearly enables, in my view, more constructive discussion at board level. Your discussion at the board becomes more balanced because not only are you focusing on the downside of taking too much risk or not taking the right risks, you're focusing on the upside or the adverse consequences if you don't take enough risk. It's a much more constructive discussion. And if we get it right as a community, it will lead to the better use of risk-based capital, even though in AMP that might not be our primary measure. And this is, I suppose, the point I'm making on measures. The consequence of doing what we're doing well will lead to better risk-based capital management. It's just we're using a more simple measure to cause that to happen. It's going to position businesses like AMP better for a more rapidly changing environment. I think we all know that volatility is here for a while to stay. And frankly, It may be, given the global world that we live in today with technology where, you know, messages are communicated in a very brief space of time, that volatility in our world is going to be a common feature that we need to get used to. So risk management becomes even more important. And I think, finally, it means that senior management teams, like mine in AMP, can take a much more holistic view and a much more explicit review of risk, knowing that all decisions can't be made centrally. It's simply not possible in a large organisation, nor is the senior management team always the best group to make every decision. Usually they're not. So if you get a risk management framework that works, you're empowering people to make better risk management decisions, and also importantly, you're holding them accountable. So I think ultimately, if we get that right as an organisation, we can better deliver on our business strategy, we can deliver better returns to our shareholders, we can have more effective leaders managing risk more effectively. And I suppose one challenge I might throw out to you today, and I know it's a focus of your discussion today, is given your capabilities and your skills in this area from a technical perspective, is how do you apply those in a way that people use them and understand them, and that businesses and organisations make the most of your skills. And technical skills are key, but they're not enough. There's no point having wonderful technical skills in a part of the organisation that no one understands or appreciates. And part of the art, or the effectiveness in my view, is making the complex simple and accepting that certain measures or certain approaches might be as technically sound or perfect, but frankly the 80-20 rule is better, and it's better that I get 80% of the business getting some understanding of risk and making good decisions rather than getting it absolutely perfect. And it can't be a linear approach that starts with a complex approach to risk measurement. There's a whole series of things that our experience is that you need to do at the same time. And in the end, it's about having an impact and being able to influence the organisation more broadly. So as I said, we've still got a way to go, but we're very confident that the approach we're taking and the direction we're taking is the right one. And in the end, that's going to lead to better outcomes for all our stakeholders, including better products and services for our customers, given their risk appetite, and certainly better returns for our shareholders. So thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Craig. That's very, very interesting. We'd be remiss if we didn't take the opportunity to ask a few questions of Craig while he's here. So send them, keep them coming through on the SMS. Craig, I think you certainly gave me a sense of the importance you place on ERM and the need to implement something that was simple and practical and easily understood, which I think is a message we're going to hear more about of during the day. Was there a sort of turning point for AMP, do you think? Over the past sort of 10 years, there have been a few sort of well-publicised issues, guarantees in the UK, financial crisis. Was there a real pivotal turning point, do you see, for the business?
That's a good question. I'm not sure there has been. I mean, I think there's certainly experiences that we've learned from in the past, and we obviously had some challenges in the UK for a period of time where we simply misunderstood the key risk that we were taking in that business and weren't measuring it properly. I just think there's been a gradual realisation that it's a very important area and that we want our business leaders to be more involved in this and take active decisions around risk, and that we've continually faced new challenges to try and get that to work and operate. I mean, I think the GFC gives you a more powerful backdrop to demonstrate the importance of that topic to your people in your organisation. I also think it's come about with discussions at the board, because I think the more discussions you have with your board where you make implicit things explicit, so you actually have constructive and open dialogue, are we on the same page about the risks we want to take and the risks we're taking? And that was also true with the senior management team. So I don't think there was any one pivotal point. It's just been a gradual journey that we've increasingly sought to get right.
And you sort of touched on the focus on profit at risk, and I can kind of understand the benefit of that. It is something people understand, particularly boards. Do you see, what are the disadvantages of that, would you see? For example, you know, profit is a short-term measure.
Yeah.
What about risks that play out only over the longer term? And how does the organisation think through those kind of issues? Mm.
It's a good question, and I think that's why no single measure is the... I mean, my learnings in business is there's no one financial measure on anything that is the perfect measure. You're right, the challenge with profit at risk is it's a more short-term concept, whereas risk-based capital, embedded values and those sorts of things are taking a longer-term approach. And I think what we're trying to do is inculcate in the organisation the understanding of risk management with a more simple measure, and then in parts of the organisation where those longer-term decisions are really important, supplement that with more complex measures that give you a better read over the longer term.
And I'm sure that following the financial crisis, you know, market risk and liquidity and credit are all now very actively managed. What do you see as the sort of the key emerging risks over the next 5 to 10 years?
Hmm. Well, there's probably many of them that I can't foresee, unfortunately, don't understand, and that's unfortunately the ones that you worry about. It's the quoting a former defence minister in the US, you know the quote, you know, it's what I don't know, I don't know, that is the sort of biggest risk. And I think it's difficult to foresee those. I just think the concept, if you look at the period we're about to go through, I think, and where markets have come from, it's hard not to look at the future and think that there'll be greater volatility in what we do. And if you look back over time and over previous economic times, that following sort of the crisis in the mid-70s, if you look at the late 70s and early 80s, markets were very volatile, and that obviously impacts our business. And I think you've also got a world that's changing much more quickly, whether it's markets, consumers, anything in business. So I don't think you can foresee every risk. I think you try to, and you know, I think it's good to sit back and think about almost the obvious risks. I mean, one discussion we had at the board, someone had previously worked with a mining company, and they had a large mine in Western Australia that had one wharf, and obviously things were going very well until a ship came in and knocked over the wharf, and that had huge implications for their business in terms of not being able to export product for a period of time. So that's an example of, well, how do you predict that risk? And we try and sit down at the board and have discussions about, well, what are risks that could really knock us for six that, in a sense, we can't envisage? And you try and do that, but human beings aren't great at predicting the future, so we have those discussions across the organisation. I think it's, if you have an effective risk management system that's continually focused and looking forward and reacting to volatility, I think you're well positioned. But there's always going to be risks that, unfortunately, you don't foresee.
And just finally, you sort of touched on the benefits of risk appetite internally within AMP. Do you see advantages externally in the marketplace as well? For example, with the analyst community, shareholders, and consumers potentially as well?
I do, and I think that's a really good question, Mike. And it's one thing that we haven't really explained in a lot of detail yet. The approach we've taken to risk management with our investors, which is something that we need to do. So, for example, and this is a shorter-term thing that our investors notice, that they understand, obviously, that we've changed the allocation of our assets in our shareholders' fund. We've got a few billion dollars in that fund, and it has a significant impact on our potential returns. We've started to try and explain to investors why we've taken the approach we're taking. In other words, it's not just a short-term reaction to the current crisis. It's a long-term approach to risk management. But we're still early on that journey, and I think we've got to do that. And I think that's important because, obviously, investors are also taking their own assessment of the risks an organisation's taking. And we need to make it clear to investors that the returns we're seeking to deliver to shareholders are risk-adjusted returns, and that we're trying to take account of risk, and that's going to influence the returns we give to them. So I think it's a very good question. I'm just picking on one of your examples of what we have to do better to explain that to the external world. And then you go to more broadly to customers and how you do that. And sometimes I think that's going back to our past history. When the industry was selling whole of life and endowment product in Australia, you know, there was a lot of work done about clearly explaining to policyholders the proposed allocations or asset allocations and the likely returns and the risk we're taking. And you wonder whether as an industry we need to do that better in non-guaranteed product where ultimately the consumer is taking the risk. And I suppose there's some learnings there from the GFC as an industry.
Very good. Well, look, thanks very much indeed, Craig. Thanks very much again. Got us off to a flying start. And I've got a small gift for you. Okay. Thanks very much again.
Great.
Got us off to a great start.
Enjoy the conference, everyone.